It's happy hour again.
It is. Welcome, everyone.
I am loud.
Well, we'll get everything figured out here. I'm pretty excited. Our first ever remote, trying to get microphones set and adjusted to the right height and volumes.
And buttons and dials.
Yeah, so welcome to Happy Hour.
Welcome back. It's been a long time.
It has been. And for anyone who is watching and going, hey, wait, what's all the noise in the background? Well, we are broadcasting live from Bear House 101.
Yeah, where we are having our one week anniversary. We're having our anniversary week. Feels like 1 week.
That's one hell of a week.
It is one hell of a week. We've been open. We're just happy to be open 1 week. But we are tonight. I am really excited. That's why I asked you to play Little Pointer Sisters later on. But
I've got so excited or whatever it is.
I don't even know the official name of the song, but in about an hour or so here, this little room here is going to be packed with people. We're doing our first ever bottle share, and just ask people to come down and bring some bottles and just share them. It's really easy.
So throughout the evening, this is going to be kind of a free flow, free form show. Whenever we can sit down together, when we've got somebody special walking through with maybe a special beer, we'll pull them over and give them some interview them, and maybe they can educate us on some beers.
Right, and see what they liked and what they didn't like. So, are you a novice or a
I have never
on
been
bottle shares?
I've never been to a bottle share.
That's cool.
So I'm looking forward to it, and I just by the post you made earlier, I can't wait to try. Was there a bourbon barrel aged?
Oh yeah, the Bigfoot.
Bigfoot, I want
to
try.
Gonna
that.
Have to hoard that one.
If that one comes out anyway.
No, they'll come out. So we you know, there's all kinds of etiquette when you're talking about bottle shares, but we decided ours was gonna be kind of informal and just like I think Chuck said, just kind of a little beer party.
You know? Sounds good.
I know some people, you can do it where you open one bottle at a time. And that's usually when you have like 10 or 12 guys, that probably works out pretty good. Where you just do one bottle at a time, everybody gets a little bit, and then you move on to the next one. But we're expecting a lot of people, so it's going to be fun to just have a bunch of, kind of like a big beer festival.
It'll be a lot of people and a lot of noise, and we'll do our best to talk into the microphones and make sure that our guests are talking into microphones too. So you can hear what's happening and what's going on. Learn a little bit along with me if you've never been to a bottle share. You know, before we get going too far, I feel like I need to give a big shout out to the Ventura Firefighters, Ventura County Firefighters this week, because we didn't have a show last week.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to the Cinco de Mayo show, but the Springs Fire kind of pushed me out of my house.
Things changed really fast. In the morning, you were ready to go, and I think an hour later, you were evacuating.
I was out of the house and on the road. And, you know, just the coordination effort that these guys did to where they could get into neighborhoods or communities and prevent any homes from being, destroyed is incredible. So a big shout out to them
and the other companies, because I saw the list that they posted with there were hundreds.
From all over California, and that's one thing California knows how to do. Definitely, they know how to fight fires.
Yeah, well, you know, we only have a few seasons, right? It's right. Winter and then fire
and
season.
Then fire season. Well, it was a break. You know, I mean, I'm broken in, I guess you could say. But one of the things that I learned too, I mean, you just talked about all these firefighters from all over the state came in. LA County firefighters were here, and Rob was one of the ones working on the fire from Fireman's Brew.
Fireman's Brew, yeah.
So if you hadn't been supporting Fireman's Brew beforehand, now is definitely a time to go buy some of their beers, just because I ended up having a really great beer by the Vibe. Imbibers.
The Ventura Independent Beer Enthusiast.
There you go. I always try and throw Imbibers in there. I don't know what's going on. But what was really great about it was that they brewed a beer, and then they sat it underneath one of the oak trees out there, and they let it sit overnight. So it was inoculated with all these natural yeast. So wild fermentation, and they served it this year. And it was one of these, you know, super crazy, kind of like this Berliner Weiss. You know, it was really light body, but it was really effervescent, and it had this really great tart. And it certainly wasn't a beer for everyone, or even maybe anyone, but it was but it was a lot of fun to taste this beer that was you know, spontaneously fermented.
Yeah, there was one guy went the last time I went that he had lambics and these barrel aged beers. I'm talking like 3, 4, 5 year old beers that this guy had, you know, cellared in his on oak in his garage or his warehouse or wherever, and it was just like it was cool because a lot of people were just passing through his tent and just kind of kept going, and I just stayed there, and it was great because once he saw that I was interested, he just goes, "Oh, you got to try this one. You know, I got an apricot, a 5 year apricot, and I got this," and that was really cool to see, like, on a homebrew level, a guy doing, like, you know, sours and lambics, and you don't really see that too often. It's hard to hold on to stuff.
Right, and I think the homebrewers are a special bunch of people too. So if somebody's bringing that, you know, initially I was thinking, there's no way I'm going to bring a you know, my last 5 gallons of a 5 year old beer, especially right. if it's a good one, just for these people to suck down. But then I remembered that this was really a fairly respectable group. You know, there were plenty of us that had our share and maybe some of the other people's share too. But it was still one of those things where you tasted it and you got to talk to the brewers, you got to get all the information about the beer. And then some pro brewers were there along
yeah,
the way too.
And I think Friday night was the big pro brew thing, but I remember some standout ones were like, some guy had a Red Hots beer. So he actually took Red Hots, the candies.
Yeah.
And put them in his beer, and that was not very good. But it was interesting to try it. And a lot of guys do chili beers and those kind of things. But really cool. That's cool that you made it out there. I didn't make it this year, but maybe next year.
Yeah. One of the pro brewers that was there was Mitch Steele from Stone. And he has a new IPA book out, and I've just got done finishing this book called Of Hops and Glory, and it's by this British beer writer, and he brews this, he goes and does the history of IPA, brews this beer, has it put in a keg or a cask, and then hauls it, does the whole boat trip, so all the way, he, you know, glances off of South America, comes back underneath Cape, whatever that is down there at the bottom of Africa, Cape, whatever it is, and then up into up to India. And so, you know, they're talking about, and through my Cicerone training, there's a lot of research done on the ABVs on beers. And so one of the common misconceptions about an IPA is that they brewed it specifically for this. Well, the English were already brewing 8, 10, 12% beers. It's just that nobody wants to drink an 8% porter when it's 98 degrees right. and 100% humidity. So here comes this 6% beer, which was basically a light beer at the time, with that's crisp and dry and hoppy. And I was getting into a conversation with somebody about this and more of a debate about, no, listen, look at these things. This is, no, I don't believe it. And so and then I'm sitting there, and here's Mitch Steele quoting this book and basically backing up everything I did. So I felt like I felt
vindicated.
Well, yeah, because I don't even know the guy, because it was one of these Skype kinds of beer education classes.
Right.
And I know that somewhere this guy's reading Mitch Steele's new book and going, oh, damn, I was kind of an ass there when I was debating it. I should have really looked at those, at the research. But
well, isn't it funny how IPAs have changed?
Well, yeah, and so
6% is like, nobody wants to brew a 6% IPA.
No, not in the U.S. anyway. If you know, you may be brewing a 6% pale ale.
Yeah, yeah, right. Strong pale ale.
Right. So anyway.
Or a weak IPA, but.
Right. Yeah. If you get a 6% IPA, people kind of go, well, I didn't get my money's worth.
Yeah. Right. where's the rest of my beer?
And that's not what I was looking for. Well, should we take a break and,
yeah, we'll
and kind of regroup?
We'll let our special guest finish eating.
Right, so we're just gonna kind of refresh, get a beer maybe, and we'll come back here in probably, I don't know, 5-10 minutes somewhere in there. So I'm gonna turn around. I'm gonna change the scene there so that you can kind of see what's happening as people are walking through, so you know that we are indeed broadcasting. So we'll be back in a little bit. Cheers.
Cheers.
So Joby, since this is my first bottle share, what should I expect?
So I by no means made up bottle shares. They've been going on. Some of them in parking lots of actual like beer events, like people waiting in line to buy stuff like Dark Lord tickets, Dark Lord Day, and there's just these ridiculous releases where like you can only get a certain amount of beer, but the party in the parking lot is almost better than the beer that you're waiting in line to buy. And so, you know, at the very core, bottle share is probably a sort of a little bit of look what I got and look what I brought. But the style that we're doing today, I like it because it's more like just, hey, we're going to throw it all in the pot. And then you can just walk by. And Chuck was nice enough to build this. He uses it for, and he built this out of like glass racks or something. And he's got ice. And so everything's well taken care of in there. And so it's nice. Get the bottle openers. And so the idea is to try a little bit of a lot of different beers. Okay. Kind of like a mini beer fest. It's not to pour, you know, a whole pint or not even 5 ounces. It's just like, hey, I've always wanted, oh, wow, I've never tried that or I've never tried this. And really get to talk about your beer that you brought or talk about just beer in general. So it's just sort of a beer party. And we really want to make it a regular thing here. I mean, this is obviously the first one, so we think it's going to be really big. But you can get really specific. Our only criteria today was two criteria. Can't be crappy. So, and the second one was it can't be on tap, which was kind of a challenge for a lot, which was cool. Yeah. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
And so just as long as it's not on tap right now, you can bring it in. And so that was fun. So people were out there searching. And some guys, of course, like yourself and me, have sellers. And Andy is bringing one of his here. He's donating, I think, or he's just showing it to us.
Yeah, I'm going to donate it.
So that, you know, so that's what it's about. It's about having that one or two bottle of that you can't get or whatever.
What's that?
How about you pick up that mic?
We're going to have Andy pick up the mic here.
So tell us what you have there, Andy.
This is a bottle that my brother sent me from Minneapolis, and it is from Fulton Brewing Company in Minneapolis, and it's called Worthy Adversary.
And
it is a Russian Imperial Stout.
And do you know anything about Fulton, Andy?
Not a whole lot. They're
kind of a newer
brewery. They're 1 year old, and this is actually their anniversary beer. And so it should be very good because I have met the guys. I do know the guys from that started up the brewery, and they do make a very good beer.
That's cool. So Andy and I did a beer trade with his that was your brother, right?
Yeah, my brother.
And of course, there was a bunch of California beers that he couldn't get his hands on. And we happened to have, and Andy went to OVC and got some. And so we somehow they got over there, and somehow his beer got over here. We're not going to talk about how. And we ended up with some really cool stuff. But this looks really cool, and it's a Russian Imperial Stout, right?
Yes.
Ordinary guys brewing extraordinary beer. That's pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to tasting that.
Yeah, so and essentially that's what a bottle share is, Chris. It's just getting together. People have been doing it with wine forever, you know. You get a few bottles of wine, you get together, you open them, taste each other's wine and stuff like that. And I'm sure it's been going on with beer for a long time too. But just a way to taste multiple beers in one time.
All right. Kind of a quick and easy breakdown. But when you're talking regulations or restrictions on it, so you say, okay, so tonight's bottle share is Pilsners, and that's all that people can bring in.
Yeah, so you can get really specific. You can do a series of them, which is really cool. You could break it down like that. Some guys get like, you know, ultra specific, like, you know, barrel aged, or we'll go even like bourbon barrel aged beers that you could bring, or sours, or things like that. And that makes it fun too, because then we didn't want to be that restrictive because it was the first time. But yeah, you can really get specific like that. And people don't want to see it. It's not snobbery or anything. It's just that you don't want somebody to bring something that it's like, oh, come on, we've all had that,
right?
You know, and it just Chuck is checking out the whole selection there.
Well, and I think he may even be organizing.
He probably is by style.
Style,
actually, a good idea to put it by style, so
taking duplicates out, whatever it is. So most of them are 22s. That was another restriction you had for tonight, right?
Right, preferably 22 or 750s. I see a couple of 750s over there, just because it stretches out a little more. You know, we don't actually know how many people are coming, so 22s and 750s will go a little longer.
But one guy did bring a 4-pack of all the same beer, which is cool too. As long as it adds up to, you know, something what a 22-ounce bottle would be.
Yeah, sure. He actually brought more. He brought like 48 ounces, so there that's cool.
All right.
So This is your first time, so it'll be fun for you too.
Right. And
actually, a lot of people that are coming will be their first time, so we'll get a chance to talk to them and see what they think. What's their favorite? And
so how are we making sure that not the whole bar is coming in?
Oh, right. So they're checking in as they walk in, showing the hostess their beers, and then they're getting a sticker slapped on them. And as long as they have that sticker in, yeah, we definitely thought about that. We didn't want people just walking in and out.
Right.
Because that's not fair. I mean, no. That's bottom line.
Well, it looks like not only that too, but we've got Andy. Can you grab one of those glasses right there?
Absolutely.
Some specific glassware that we're using. We're not just using our
little sampler glasses.
4 ounce sampler glasses. These are some serious glasses where you can give it a good swish and really taste it, enjoy it. So
yeah. So we keep talking about Chuck. I should say, Chuck Higgle. He's with Wine Warehouse, and he is a phenomenal asset to us since we've opened. And he was here helping us put in beer lines and connecting stuff and troubleshooting and classifying. He's a wealth of knowledge, and he loves these kind of things. When he found out we were doing it, he's like, I have the ice thing already. I have glasses. And it's like, thank you, Chuck. Like, all right. Unfortunately, he lives up in San Luis Obispo. I wish he lived closer.
Right. Yeah, that's a haul.
But he tries to make a point of stopping here on his way back and forth, but... Yeah, so he's kind of emceeing, I guess, the evening, which is really cool. All
right, so as people are coming through, he's going to help everyone.
He's going to help them and
kind of
answer questions. And
very good.
He's already kind of perusing and analyzing the situation.
I wonder if we can get him to come over for a minute here in the middle of things. See if he can come on over and
I think he is.
Grab a mic. Pulling up a chair.
All right, Chuck.
Hi, Chuck.
How do you do?
So I only just met Chuck, half hour ago, 45 minutes ago, somewhere in there. So tell us how it is that you got into the beer business.
You got to go back a long time that. But the beer was just being invented in Sumeria when I got in the business, and I kind of followed it through from there. I was in college and never drank beer, and then suddenly I decided maybe I should, but I was poor, so I only drank one beer at a time. And every time I went to the store, I would just get one bottle. And when you only have one bottle, you're really going to take a lot of care with it. You're just going to make it really good and really enjoy it. And so I think I skipped over the guzzling without caring about the beer stage of my normal, growth patterns, and went straight to just really liking beer a lot. But in those days, all beer was imported. There was no California beers yet. So even if there was, I didn't know about it because they were too small and nobody knew about it. So I was vaguely aware of Anchor Steam and Anchor Porter, and that was it.
And so from college, you decided to go work for a distributor?
No, I went into the restaurant with a gentleman named Spike, who was opening a restaurant in San Luis Obispo to specialize in beers. So I walked in and said, I'm your man, let's make it special and have fun with it. So I kind of looking back now realize that there was no serious beer bar in California at that time. Or by serious, I mean run by somebody who's out actually looking for the beers, not just waiting around for somebody to come deliver it. For instance, Joby here was what I call an activist beer manager. If a salesman comes in and tries to sell him a beer, he already knows about it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, most of the time, that beer may be even available because he asked for it in the first place. So in other words, a bar owner or a liquor store owner who's actually out ahead of the distribution system a little bit is what I call an activist. And today we have that at the Toronado in San Francisco and things like that. But in the early 80s, there was nobody.
Yeah, now I had read somewhere that you, I don't want to say that, but you invented the beer festival.
No, the Modern Beer Festival was invented in Boulder, Colorado by Charlie Papazian.
No, right, but California.
I went out to the second Great American Beer Festival, and it was still held under a little tent in the grass area of the Boulder Hilton, and was all old Prohibition-era breweries because there was only maybe 10 or 12 microbreweries that could send beer out to it. And so I came back to California, and the next thing I know, one of the local radio station is wanted to come to me and said, we should do a beer fundraiser. Let's do a dinner. And I said, no. Let's go bigger. Let's do a beer festival.
Let's do a festival, yeah.
So the first several, we had to depend on imported beers. We served every California beer we could get our hands on, and that only took up a 6-foot banquet table at the Vet, you know. So,
are we talking early 80s?
And then for the fourth year, we eliminated imports and went all California only.
Okay.
So we had 14 brewers to work with by 1987, and 30 the next year, and then 45 the year after that. And I was able to sustain that program of bringing together every California brewery up until about our seventh year when I gave up.
So the festival is not around anymore?
It's still going, but more of a free-form festival as opposed to a very specific themed festival.
Gotcha.
The original theme was to be California only and all of California or die trying.
Really hard.
You bet it was hard.
Yeah, there's just under shy of 400 breweries.
Yeah, now you can do California. That festival, no problem.
I still think we could do it. We could do it. Come on. we had such a great team of volunteers by that time in our fifth, sixth, seventh year that they had all graduated. This was up in San Luis Obispo, where half of my volunteers are Cal Poly students who then graduate and move back to wherever they came from. So my people were everywhere. I had plants, in every town and every county in California who would do anything for a keg of beer. Crazy, crazy people. You know, you tell them you need a keg of beer in the middle of the night, they'll be there in the back of their Volkswagen. They'll have it down to San Luis Obispo by the next morning, nice. You know. And it was just great working with people like that.
That's really cool. And so... And now you're with Wine Warehouse.
Right. So I'm now on the distribution end of it, which is the middleman, you know, between the the bar and the brewery. So it's kind of fun to get that perspective as well.
Yeah. What's your official title?
Well, the name of the distributorship is Wine Warehouse, which lets you kind of get a clue that these guys thought they were in business to sell wine. Mm-hmm. It's only gradually they've come to realize that beer is a rapidly growing part of their distribution business. I am a beer specialist, meaning I wasn't hired for my wine knowledge. Everybody else in the company is a wine expert,
right.
And they hire about every eighth or tenth person as a token beer guy. So that's me.
That's cool. And you're the first. You're the first token beer guy, right?
No. There's my clones are ten of us up and down the Southern California map, and another group of us in Northern California doing the same thing. So our job is to go out and support beer events like this any way we can. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
So do you have to run around the distribution center with a red letter B on your chest, or you just, or they know?
They just know.
They just know.
Some people just look like beer guys, you know. You can't really hide it.
You can't really miss Chuck. Chuck, how tall are you?
6'5".
Yeah, so when he walks in, everybody's like, that's the beer guy.
6'5" in a Chimay shirt.
Yeah, in a Chimay shirt.
So that's a giveaway.
So you're not going to miss him at all. Well, that's crazy. So what do you spend your time on then? You're coming to Barrel House 101, or do you, what's your day filled up with?
I try to be responsible for a 3-county area, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and all the way up to, you know, San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles, Cambria. But I'm also a draft beer technician, and so I'm also a line cleaner. I'm also a waitress trainer. You know, so it's just anything I can do to support the beer side of the distribution business, they call on me for that.
Yeah, Chuck's always got spare parts, which is awesome. I mean, that's right. If he doesn't, he'll find
them. The trunk of my car is just a big beer toolkit.
Sweet. Tap handles, faucets, whatever you need.
If there's a crisis, if I don't have it, I feel really embarrassed. You know, right. If I don't have the part that's missing, I feel terrible. So
what were you doing over here? We were kind of watching as you were organizing the beer cart.
Yeah, think of this as a buffet, you know. Think of it as a salad bar for beer. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
People are going to walk up and they're going to scratch their chin. They're going to say, well, what is this? And they're going to pick it up, they're going to look at it, and then they're going to pour a little bit in their glass and set it back down. And then while they're still drinking that, they're going to look at 3-4 others and go, oh, what's this one about? And they're going to look at it, pick it up, and put it back down again. So I wanted an ice system that wasn't just big, you know, 100 pounds of ice, because every time you pick up a bottle, other bottles start to tip over and beer could spill, which is a tragedy you never want to see in a event like this. So it's by using glassware racks, each beer is stable, and you can pick it up and put it back down again if you want.
We'll have to get it. We really need to get a when we get off. Yeah, we'll get a picture.
Well, well, it'll be full later on. It'll be kind of overflowing with bottles of beer and ice.
It'll be really nice. It'll be nice to see just kind of the glass shelving, whatever it is, the glass crates, and then as it goes into ice and beer as well too, so that people can kind of get an idea.
It's a genius system because there's actually trash cans underneath. So as it drains,
oh, very good.
You have a trash can of water and you just
perfect.
Throw it out.
Yeah, I was thinking that it was actually lined because just the way that the wrapping is all the way around. But no, that's right. I remember looking in there and seeing holes that go all the way down to the bottom.
Yeah, so anything we spill or any ice that melts disappears.
All right. Now, Chuck, before we get started with this whole festivities, what's the name of your class, your beer class?
Well, there is a one-night stand edition of the beer class taking place Wednesday in Santa Barbara, and that's just called the American Beer Revolution in California, basically. And it's a seminar talking about how we transitioned from the era of Bud only to the great selection of beers we have now. And the early part of that transition, of course, being very, very difficult for the brewers who undertook it. And so we get to know some of the brewers by reputation. They can't be there, but I'll tell you all about them, and we'll drink their beer.
That's cool. Good.
And take it up. We'll take it up to the mid-90s. We won't try to bring it all the way up to modern day, but we'll talk about the pioneers and get to the point where the business seemed to stabilize a little bit. So that'll be the theme of that tasting.
And that's Wednesday, May 19th?
May
15th. What time?
In Santa Barbara, 6:30. For a location and directions and more about it, go ahead and check in. I think Kobe has, Joby.
It's okay. Happens all the time.
Has all the information here at the Barrel House and can lead you to the proper email addresses.
And I must say, any event, seminar, whatever you want to call it with Chuck is very informative. It's is there a cost for it?
Yeah, it's a $40 ticket.
Well worth it. I mean,
sit down and go to beer school for a night.
Yes,
and learn everything you need to know about California beer, or at least the beginnings.
American.
I'm all for continuing adult education, and in this case, this is a subject matter we can all get behind. So.
Right. Excellent, Chuck. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and on the show.
Thank you.
Right, and the bottle share is going to be starting in like a minute.
Yeah,
so
that's it.
So we're gonna call it a good here. We'll come back in and out from now and again. So
a happy hour with Joby and Curtis.
Yeah, we'll catch you in a bit.
Cheers.
Cheers. So, hey, welcome back to happy hour here, and you may recognize Jason if you've ever seen us two standing next to each other. Or sitting behind microphones.
If you don't recognize us side by side, you better start tuning into Pints and Pairings.
Right. What are you doing? Come on, get over there. Check out Pints and Pairings. So anyway, we're at Barrel House 101. Their first, we're celebrating the 1 year anniversary of Barrel House.
It's a good crowd too. A lot of support.
And we're celebrating with a bottle share, which is crazy. And for anyone who doesn't know what a bottle share is, everyone in this room brought a bottle to share, and we're all just kind of pouring ourselves our own little tasters.
And there's some good beer so far. You can tell that the people who are supporting the one-year anniversary and coming to Barrel House 101 know what they're selecting and trying to provide something for their friends to enjoy.
Right. No one brought in a 24-ounce can of Coors Light.
Do we really want to relive that episode?
No, I don't want to relive any Coors Light.
So, what are you drinking right now?
So I've got the brewery's Saison Sour. Wait, the Sour...
On the Saison Rue?
No, this is the Sour one. No, so this is Sour in the Rye.
Oh, okay. My Sour in the Rye is at home in the closet waiting patiently.
Yeah, this is fantastic. So you should get a drink of this so that you know what you've got.
But you have to secure.
I don't know if I would sit on this for that long though.
No.
No.
I'm drinking the Double Dog Pale, double pale. Mm. It's pretty nice. It's crisp. It's got some good bittering notes. A little citrus pith.
So that's a monster too. It comes in at 8% or something like that.
Oh, that's incredible. You better go slow.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to give yourself a little tiny pour. So what beer did you bring in?
I brought in the Old Ruffian from Great Divide out of Colorado. You know, the Great Divide company is putting out a really great line of beers. I haven't had one that I've been disappointed by. What I really like about them is they take a single style. They've got the Yeti, and they've taken their Yeti through multiple iterations. So the Yeti is typically their stout.
Imperial stout.
Imperial stout, and they've worked it through in a chocolate oak age, a regular oak age. They've got a barrel age Yeti, but they've also been moving recently into some Belgians. So they've got Colette and Orbel, as well as Hades. They're all farmhouse and Belgian styles.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty nice. Good daily drinks in a 12-ounce bottle pack.
I think Yeti is probably my favorite imperial stout. And one of the things what you were just talking about is these iterations, but it's more like a horizontal tasting as opposed to a vertical. So instead of tasting 3-4 years in consecutive order, judging how this beer aged, whatever, here you can get 4 or 5 Yetis, different ones, whether it's the oak age or if it has chocolate nibs in it, whatever it is. All of the, you know, then you can taste each one side by side and just kind of pick them apart if you want to, but mostly I just enjoy them side by side the whole way.
Yeah, and I like that because you're taking, again, that base recipe, and you're working across the line with minimal variables. You're not totally reinventing the wheel. You're just adding a couple of small notes that will improve it or change the characteristics a little bit.
Right, yeah. I have a really great Divide story, too, because I was there when they were just this little tiny brewery and fairly new. And it was during the Great American Beer Festival, and we got to walk through the brewery. It was just like a self-guided tour. You could walk wherever you wanted to. And they were pouring their very first fresh hop ale.
Okay.
They were pouring it right out of the fermenter into glasses. Oh, anyone
wow.
who walked
That's
by.
Super fresh.
And so, well, yeah, so just incredibly fresh, naturally carbonated, everything. And it was just, it's one of those beer moments that I'm not going to forget, just being able to walk through and then stand, you know, being led around as a tour by the brewmaster and just having free roam over the brewery. I mean, people are sitting on grain sacks, they're walking up looking into the boil kettles and all that. So
my first experience with them was actually at a museum party in Colorado, right outside Denver. My friend used to work for a wildlife museum, and they did a fundraiser. So there was food and there was all these beer vendors. And what I love about those kind of environments, you know, we get in these beer festivals, it's typically the brewers or friends of the brewers or friends of the brewery out there sharing their passion for the beer. So when you go up to get a pour in your glass, they can tell you about it. They can tell you why they love it and why they're standing behind it. So you're guaranteed to get some kind of story and an appreciation for the beer that you're probably not going to get anywhere else. And, you know, with the Old Ruffian that I brought in tonight, a barley wine, it shows their spectrum as well. Mm-hmm. So the barley wine is going to typically knock you on your butt a little bit, but it's going to have great flavor. It's going to have some heat in the back of the throat. And, you know, breweries nowadays, they want that spectrum. They want to be able to hit a lot of different markets and a lot of different palates.
Right, and just showing the diversity of what they can brew is something that everyone is looking for. You
sure.
know, whether it's the beginning beer geek who's just going into the brewery, or you and I, you know, we want to go through that whole lineup. And one of the things I really love about the brewery too is it's, you're talking maybe 4 blocks away from Rockies Stadium. So if you're in Denver and you're at, don't go to the Sandlot, don't drink that.
There's no excuse for not getting a good beer.
Right. You go down to, you walk the 4 blocks over to Great Divide, and you get your beer on there, and then you go back to the ball game.
Sure, and I think you'd agree that Colorado is one of the leading states in terms of breweries. I'd say it's definitely in the top 5 in quality breweries and number of breweries that are just really starting to saturate the market and put out some quality beers that you can pull off the shelf and feel confident in what you're getting.
Well, what I think is funny is I used to talk about Colorado as like the Rocky Mountain Seattle. I mean, basically, that's what it was. It was the Rocky Mountain Northwest. And now there's places opening up in Michigan and some other places, and starting to classify them as the Denver of whatever state they're at, you know. So
it's an evolution.
Yeah, so they just, the great beer is just moving all over the place. So
sure.
It's fun to find these new beer destinations all
and
over.
And everybody out there can hear the volume starting to kick up a little bit. Tasting and the bottle share is really picking up. We're getting, again, great support. People are starting to fill the room, and it's a lot of fun to see everyone come out and share a passion for the beer that they love.
Yeah. So that's a good, I like that ending right there, Jason. That's a good conclusion to our little micro interview here.
Thank you.
So what I want to do is I'm going to come back in about 10 minutes, so looking at 7:20 California time. Wherever you're at, you can do the math. I'm not going to do it for you.
And hopefully you're sitting at home drinking and enjoying a great beer as well.
Right.
And if not, get off your ass, get in their fridge, and pull something out that you're going to love.
Perfect. I'll be back in about 10 minutes with another special guest. All right. Cheers.
Thanks, Curtis.
Bye. There we go. So, happy hour here, celebrating the one-year anniversary at Festival Barrel House, and we're doing a bottle share. I'm here with Josh. Josh, what did you bring tonight?
I brought the Stone Brewery Dayman Coffee IPA and the Knee Deep Simtra Triple IPA.
So, of the two, which one was your favorite?
I've had the Simtra Triple before. The Dayman was a first. Mm. Very surprising. Specifically, when you think of coffee, you think of dark black colors. Mm-hmm. This was a very IPA color with all the flavor profiles of a coffee. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I first tasted that. It was such a sensory overload for me because what I was tasting, I shouldn't have tasted in this light color of beer.
I agree. I was caught off guard by it.
Right, and I'm trying to think of where I had it. Maybe I had it on, I had it on tap somewhere, but it was one of those things where it just, I don't know if I could necessarily, if I enjoyed it at the time. It was too much of two different things. But I just had it again this weekend at the Southern California Homebrewers Festival in Lake Casitas, and that was, and I enjoyed it, but maybe it was because Mitch Steele was standing up in front of me talking to this whole group. I mean, he wasn't talking to me, but he was talking to the whole group.
Well, at the time, it was a destination beer. Only a few places had it. You'd either have to go to San Diego or Pasadena for it. And the fact that we got it in Ventura County speaks volume for our beer culture here, and it was a great beer.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think because I tried your the double IPA.
The Simtra.
I've got to
triple.
Remember. The triple IPA. That thing, because I needed a palate cleanser. Actually, I went from a Golden Corillus, whatever it was, the Easter, and which was just sitting so heavy in my on my palate. You know?
Belgium style, yeah. Some of those usually do that.
Well, what's crazy, though, is that there was so much carbonation in it when you're looking at it, but it just coated your mouth. Nothing was lifting off. So I went to the Simtra, and that was an effective palate cleanser.
And for us California, sometimes an IPA is a palate cleanser.
That's right.
You know, I go to concerts these days, and I smell all these smells, and I associate it with hops, not marijuana at all.
That's the
beer drinker in me.
Right.
Yeah. So you know what? For us Californians, an IPA is a palate cleanser.
Yeah. You get that waft, and you go, God, I could really use a beer right now.
I did the same thing. Yeah.
So what has stood out for you so far? What have you tasted that stood out for you?
Well, somebody brought some of these California Belgium style beers, and I've not caught the names of the breweries, but they're very progressive. Tastes you don't associate with California, because when you think of California, you think of IPAs, San Diego style beers, very hop aggressive. But some of these beers have been very aromatic, very carbonated, like that Easter beer you tasted. Yeah, that's a Belgium style, but it's not from Belgium.
Right.
So I'm throttled by some of the beers we're tasting tonight.
Yeah, the Saison, not the Saison, the Sour in the Rye from Brewery.
Beautiful.
Brewery is one of my favorite breweries anyway, and I love the Saison Rue. That's a go-to beer for me.
Oh yeah.
But tonight was the first time that I'd had the Sour in the Rye.
Yeah.
And spot on. I mean I don't necessarily know if there's a sour rye style category, but if there is, that should be it.
Well, and the thing about sours, it's a very niche, still very niche beer, and you're having to either go to driving to LA or trading beers online to get these sours, and they're becoming a very popular style of beer. And with the Whole Foods opening up pretty soon here in Oxnard, California, they're going to be carrying a good amount of sours. So it's going to be, it's not one of those things that you talk to your friend about and you're like, sour, what's a sour? And, when you first have it, it's, wow, it's different. It is very different.
Yeah, it's about to blow the lid off, definitely.
Don't tell anybody.
No.
Let's not talk about it.
Right, yeah. We don't need everyone to know about that, because then you walk into Whole Foods and then that whole section is gone.
It's gone, yeah.
So how did you get into beer?
My brother first got into BevMo, believe it or not, when they first started up. And he was the beer expert. So he would get sent home with beer, and they would have homework to do because he was hosting these beer tastings.
Sure.
And at the time, we were sharing an apartment. So, I mean, I had these crazy beers from all over the world. And at the time, BevMo didn't really know what they were doing half the time. And they carried beer from Somalia, believe it or not, that had dirt in their beer. But you would taste these, you know, awesome beers from, like, San Diego. Obviously, people knew about Stone. Arrogant Bastard was a well-known name at the time, but, you know, Ballast Point. You would get these just aggressive-tasting beers, and that's how I got into it. Luckily, I got these beers for free, and I was able to find out what I liked, what I didn't like at the time.
So if you had to pick a style that was your go-to style, now not your favorite, not whatever, you know, because I think sours are probably my favorite, but that's not what I'm going to be drinking every single day. So something that's your go-to beer, one that you just find yourself coming back to.
Yeah, if I was to go with a style of beer, it'd be an IPA. Now, if I had to pick one brewery that was making my favorite IPA, it would be Ballast Point in San Diego. Mm. Their Sculpin IPA, one of the best well-rounded. Mm-hmm. And when I say well-rounded, I mean we're used to, you know, Stone, Brewer Nation, or the Stone IPAs that are above 100 IBUs. But the Ballast Point just makes a well-rounded IPA, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. Even if you're having the Sculpin, or if you're going to their double IPA, the Dorado, it's strong, but it still tastes really good.
Yeah, that is a heavy hitting beer.
It's
definitely
great.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a good one, and true to Southern California West Coast style IPA. You know, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, Northwest, dare I say, there's a difference between Northwest IPAs and Southern California IPAs.
Oh, definitely.
There's a hop flavor and bitterness component here that is, whereas, you know, there's definitely a hop bitterness and flavor for Northwest, but it seems like the Northwest beers have a substantial malt backbone behind them.
Correct.
You know, I'm thinking of now an example of one just kind of floats off the top of my head, but you know, where you've got this really well balanced beer, here it is all about the hops.
Yeah, is it a hop aggressive culture? I just spent a week in Montana where the average IPA that I had was 50 IBU. So 50 IBU to me and you, being a Californian, is nothing. That's a pale ale to me and you.
Right.
But it's a culture, you know. And I hate to say it, but a lot of us might have partaken in a certain something we smoked back in the day for us to appreciate, you know, hops and cannabis. Cousins.
Right.
But California, wow. We got it going on.
What part of Montana were you in?
I was all over Montana. I was in Missoula.
Nice.
Which is the Portland of Montana.
It is, yes.
And I was in Billings, which is the biggest city in Montana.
Yeah.
And Bowman, all over, even all the way up to their national park, Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pizza / brewery there as well. They're good. They're known for stouts and porters, but the IPA still hasn't hidden there just yet.
Yeah, I've driven across Montana quite a few times, and that's one of the things that has changed over the years is that if you're driving east to west, whatever it is, across 90, you hit Billings, and then all of a sudden there's breweries there. You know,
tons of breweries.
One year you're there and there's nothing, and the next year there's a handful of them. So you get your taste all the way through. And then Missoula, you know, it's a college town on top of it, and so there's plenty of beer.
Great beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the craziest beers I had in Montana was a Scottish ale on nitro. It was a barrel aged. Mm. And people talk about barrel age, and they're very oaky, very flavorful beers. And Maker's Mark is, I guess, the barrel to get these days. But I don't want to say got plastered, but I got pretty wrecked.
There was enough beer for you.
Well, and the thing is that you for the breweries, they have a time limit to sell beer. They open, the earliest they could open is at 4 p.m. and the last beer they could pour is at 8 p.m. So you're making it your life's mission to drink as much beer as possible in the very limited amount of time. And, you know, when I got home after the first night there, I thought I got home at 2 a.m. It turned out to be 9 p.m., and I was wrecked.
You fell asleep, and you woke up the next day, and you were $100 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I was ready for
the next beer. Because you went to bed at 8:30.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what I think is interesting about temperance laws, is they get it all wrong.
Yeah.
If you limit the time that somebody's going to drink, they're just going to pack it in. It doesn't – you got – I mean – I guess I can kind of see maybe what they were thinking, but this is a case in point right there, where if you're only open for 4 hours a day, that's going to be packed to those 4 hours.
They had a trolley, so like a San Francisco-style trolley, driving from brewery to brewery just to get people in and out, tanked as possible. Yeah.
Josh, thank you so much for sitting with me.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it, and we're going to be coming back in, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll let you know here pretty quick. With another special guest here at Barrel House 101's one-year anniversary, the Bottle Share. So we'll catch you in a few minutes. Cheers.
Cheers.
Super. Later. Let me make sure that we start recording our segment so that everyone can see it. We're here at Barrel House 101 one-year anniversary party, and I've got the man of the hour here, Joby, and he has thrown together. This is a great party, everyone.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of newbies, and we had some, I mean, props to the hardcore. These guys brought out some insane stuff. I don't know whether or not everybody even saw it, but I saw it when they were bringing it out of their bags, and they brought out some amazing stuff. They brought out some really cool stuff, and props to them for that. That's really cool.
Yeah, there are beers. So one of the rules, well, two of the rules was 22 ounce and then something you don't have on tap. And there is a bunch of stuff here that you don't have on tap.
That we wish we had on tap. So as your first a bottle share, what do you think?
Well, let me just put it this way. This is such a crazy beer experience that I'm shooting over Parabola to find something else. I mean,
pass it. Go ahead. I think I'm okay with Parabola.
Right. I'm passing over Parabola for something. And who in the right mind would do something like that?
What stood out to you besides the Scotty's Triple?
The sour and the rye.
Yeah, that was really good.
That was fantastic.
There was a couple of breweries. The brewery made a showing today, definitely.
They did, yeah. There's a couple of them. The one thing that stands out to me, and not because I necessarily enjoyed it, it was that the peer pressure for me to try that beer was enormous.
I thought that was awesome. You said the second thing on your list that you would never do was that. But you have to try it. I mean, and you're referring to Wincoop?
Wincoop, yeah.
Brewing. Rocky Mountain Oyster Stout.
Yeah, and...
Something I will never drink again, but I'm glad I... I don't know if I'm glad I tried it, but I tried it.
The same here. And
it was so smoky. It was... iodine-y, as Jason called it.
That's a good point for the iodine, the iron sort of flavor.
The iron, yeah. Well, you said it was like eating liver or drinking liver.
Right. I've always said that I've never met a beer that I wasn't sad that I didn't try, and so I'm not. You know, I'm glad that I tried that, but I won't go back for it either. I mean, it's great that it's in a can, and I'm a big proponent of craft beer in a can, but...
12 ounces at a time. I mean, that's cool. So,
You might be able to spread that 12-ounce can, or that 12-ounce can out to about 12 people, too.
Yeah, probably. Exactly. A couple other things that were really cool was I liked the way that it was set up, and everybody's able to kind of drink everything, and it was kind of like, hey, who brought this? And, like, who brought that? And that was cool. Definitely... a lot of big beers. Shortage of big barrel aged and imperial, the theme of the night.
Right. So just to give you an idea of how big beers are, I'm cleansing my palate with a triple.
Right. I think there was some Bigfoot, barrel aged Bigfoot that was about 12.2.
Yeah. I was asking somebody, what's the normal ABV on a Bigfoot? 10%?
Yeah, it's like 9.5.
Okay.
So why it's stronger, I don't know. It's not a normal Bigfoot.
Evidently, they left some bourbon in those barrels when they racked into the barrels.
So that was really cool. And like you said, Parabola was getting passed around. Double barrel. That was really cool. That's always an old favorite. I was excited to actually cross one off my list was Knuckle Sandwich from Bootleggers in Fullerton. I've never been able to get that beer, and it was fun to cross that one off. Very tropical, fruity IPA, which was nice.
That one, and then there's the triple IPA, the Simtro.
Knee Deep, yeah. So Simcoe and Citra Hop.
So where is Knee Deep? I'm trying to remember.
So they are in San Leandro. Don't call me, but outside of San Francisco.
Okay.
In that little like area of awesome beers now, like Drake's and Knee Deep.
Just as anyone can see who's watching at the beer table over there, there are plenty of people enjoying pulling out the beers, pouring beers.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun because you're like, where was that beer at? And you're pulling out, and then you see something else while you're looking for that one. Then you kind of lose track, and you're like, oh, never mind, I'll just try this right now.
Yeah, it's been tough for me because I've been going through these, and then all of a sudden I see one like Pentagram.
Oh, right, Surly Brewing.
Right, and so where did that come from?
That came from one of our guys, Ryan. He brought that in.
So this beer's coming in from Minnesota, which it's not getting shipped out of Minnesota anywhere, but somebody here has it.
Yeah, beer trading. Okay. That's what it's called.
So that was probably one of the highlights. And I wasn't expecting like a sour imperial stout or whatever that was. That was a fantastic beer.
And definitely a crazy label with all the pentagram and the very impressive bottle, wax dipped. I mean, really cool.
It was.
I can't imagine. It's got to be like a $20-something bottle. I don't know.
Well, and then just trying to find the name of it too. So as I'm trying to read through all of the spells or the witchcrafts all the way through. And then I'm like, oh, there's the name, Pentagram. About time. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't see what was happening. But so that was a great one too. I'm having a great time. So, you know, it's fun being able to pull people out and have conversations with them. Anyone stands out for you? I mean, you've been mingling all night too.
Well,
so.
A lot of these guys are all, most of these guys are all regulars. Definitely you should probably talk. There's a couple of guys, he already left, but he showed me a picture of his fridge, and I think he had more Firestone, like, vintage ales than Firestone has. He had, like, I think he didn't have 10. He was kind of mad, but he didn't have 10 anymore. But he had, like, 11 through 16, the Succuba, Abacus, like, everything. I was like, that is an impressive. So there was definitely a lot of check out my fridge, which I was like, and for me, I mean, my fridge is like here at work. So when I see somebody's home fridge, I'm like, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I think that's one of the side benefits of a bottle share is people want to show you what they've got in store.
And very impressive what they have at home. It's like, oh my God. And they're going, I didn't know what to bring tonight, so I just kind of brought these. But general consensus is let's do it again. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
So I'm glad to hear that. So I can't imagine what they'll bring next time. So now the bar has been raised.
Right. So we'll help you. I'll give you some ideas on let's try. Maybe we could do one of those dogfish-esque kind of things where we all have to chew the malt and spit it into a barrel. No.
I don't think that one, they never ended up making that one.
No, nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted to taste Sam's spit, even though it had been fermented out. You know, who knows?
Right.
But this is, you know, I think it's a great time to kind of call it quits because everyone is getting sufficiently buzzed up on on these delicious beers.
It's a good time to talk beer.
It is a good time and get back to the group. So these will all be out.
Yeah,
so in the webs.
We'll make this into one episode.
Right. Yeah, I'll just kind of compact everything into it. And
that'd be cool.
And anyone who's been, you know, watching us through the whole set and watch Brittany come up and flash herself in front of the camera and then realize that it was broadcasting, I will. You have to ask Brittany about that. So it was funny. You know, that's broadcasting. That's why the little green light's on.
Yeah, right. That's on. Camera's on.
Camera is on. All right, so
all right, awesome.
You know what? We've got, it's going to be probably next week you're off.
Yeah, so.
And then we'll come back after that, and we'll get a couple shows in, and then I'm on family vacations for a couple weeks. So
it's okay, but I'm digging the live broadcast. It's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, we'll be able to get out and and enjoy some other locations, definitely.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks for joining us. Happy hour with Joby and Curtis.
And we will see you next time.
Cheers.
Cheers.